This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You can go to our website for information at that time, what the verdict is. And of course, tomorrow we will cover it fully on Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berker, Nate Feld, Sarah Monte, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, and Tarina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, Kristen Goff, and Vesta Gadars, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Craig-Meadows, Carla DeJesus. I'm Mimi Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic will be the proposed oil terminal in Vancouver that would route dangerous oil trains through Oregon.
Afghanistan. Obama talks withdrawal while over 100,000 U.S. and NATO troops remain alongside an equal number of contractors. While the most intense fighting since 2001 rages out of control. Fleeing Afghans make up the largest refugee asylum-seeking population in the world today. Tune in to Political Perspectives Wednesday morning, July 31st at 9 a.m. Professor Zahair Wahab, returning from 5 months in Kabul training teachers, will join me, Linda Olson-Osterlund, to report on the state of the country and the war. Then we'll open up the phone lines for your call. Tune in and call in this Wednesday, July 31st at 9 a.m. for Report from Afghanistan.
Good people, stay tuned every second and fourth Thursday at 8 p.m. for Guess Who's Coming to Radio, a show with music and discussion, addressing socio-political issues relevant to African peoples in this nation. We encourage you to call in with some positive, proactive solutions to what we are facing today. Guess Who's Coming to Radio, every second and fourth Thursday at 8 p.m. on KBOO, your community radio.
And now for the fun one. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting Leon Russell with Emily Elbert, Sunday, August 11th. Tickets and information for Leon Russell, August 11th at the Aladdin-Theater.com.
Casey Jones, he was a mighty man, and now he's resting in the promised land. The only kind of music he could understand was a big eight-wheeler under his command. He made the freight train boogie all the time. He made the freight train boogie and he rolled down the line.
Yeah, Chet Atkins, Doc Watson.
Who doesn't like trains, man? Trains,
oh, I love
cool.
Trains. I actually left New York on a cold, snowy, just after a horrible storm day in 1947. I'm that old. And I went across the United States. First, I had to change trains. You know, we don't have transcontinental trains in the United States. Did you know that?
I did not.
It's a true fact.
We have tracks.
You go to Chicago and you have to change trains.
Okay.
Change trains and got on the Super Chief, Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe Railroad, and rode all the way to Los Angeles, where the next day I got out onto the backyard, high grass, hot weather, wet grasses, wearing shorts, which in those days nobody in California did when they were a kid. Oh, it was lovely.
So let me you rolled out of New York, nothing in your pocket but a beat up pack of Marlboros and a broken heart.
Well, I was 7 years old.
Oh, okay, never mind.
I mean, you know, I was with my mommy and my sister and, you know.
I was painting this great romantic picture, man.
Well, it was romantic. I was a kiddie, you know. Okay, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor over there, me, Joe,
yep.
Yours. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we want to hear from you. We're going to be talking about actually fossil fuels moving through our region.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's going to be the subject. 231-8187.
Here's what's going on.
What's going on?
There's been a huge boom under the Obama administration in domestic production of fossil fuels.
Yes.
Petroleum.
Yes.
Natural gas and coal, all
yes.
of them.
Fracking. Fracking.
We are fracking ourselves over.
Yeah.
From sea to shining sea. Here's to put some numbers to it. Back in 2009, way back in 2009.
Oh, I remember well, 2009.
There were 31 rail car loads a day of crude oil making their way across North America.
Uh-huh.
Last year, there were 1,400 car loads a day. The reason for this, basically, is that production has increased to the point that pipeline capacity is insufficient to ship all this crude oil.
Oh, well, let's build a pipeline.
So we're putting it on trains.
Let's build a pipeline.
There's so many ironies that abound in this story.
Build a pipeline.
Environmentalists for a long time have been praising the benefits of trains, right, as a economical and efficient and clean way to transport things, right?
Well, yeah.
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 But now they're shipping crude oil all over the place.
Well, I mean, you know, there's trains and then there's trains.
I don't know what that means.
What that means is that it really depends on what the cargo is, and it really depends on what condition the rails and cars that are shipping things are.
And well, that makes really sense.
Important.
Sure.
And of course, there's a lot of other things going on here. I mean, we're bringing together in this conversation a whole bunch of issues. Fracking, for example, has produced a superfluity. Woo! I like that word. A superfluity of natural gas and other petroleum products squeezed out of the earth through the use of pressure and chemicals, which in turn have produced an enormous increase in methane gas going into the atmosphere and enormous damage to water tables everywhere. Now, the other aspect of the same sort of thing is the leveling of mountains to get cheap coal, which is happening in Pennsylvania and in West Virginia. And also now in Wyoming and Montana and the Dakotas. And all of that coal is being shipped largely, well, not all of it, a lot of it is being shipped to the east, to the Orient.
Well, we have so many mountains. We can spare a few mountains.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so that's going on. So what's really happening is that there is a change in the economy of the United States, which is profound and potentially dangerous. We have moved from the role of being a manufacturing nation and a farming nation to the role of being a raw material provider to the rest of the world.
Yeah, and a consumer of finished goods that are cheaply made in other parts of the world.
In the process, our working class has suffered an enormous loss of annual income. And in general, we have become like a third world nation in a way with this production of raw materials. This is good for capital and potentially good for income to the government, but not necessarily wise for the environment or for the people of the United States. And here locally, we have some examples of the impact of all this. The coal terminals planned for Clatskanie and other locations, Boardman, will take heavy sulfur coal on open car trains, huge trains, go up or down, I should say, the Columbia River, the Columbia Gorge, on both sides of the river, and dump it in plants which we are assured will be very well enclosed and very safe, putting it on barges in some cases or directly onto ships going overseas. That coal is shipped to China and other countries, where it is processed and made into energy, while the waste products thereof will go into the atmosphere and kind of poison the air and kind of create more greenhouse gases all over the world.
Kinda.
I like kinda.
Yeah, I think it's kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah, a little wishy-washy. It's true that that's going to happen, and it's unless we, all of us, understand the implications of what's going on, it will be unstoppable.
There's a couple of things here that bother me in particular.
Yeah.
First of all is the repeated assurances of safety. We seem to hear this again and again.
It's safe.
Right, it's safe. This plant we're going to build is safe. This pipeline we're going to build is safe. Putting this crap on trains and shipping it around is safe. Just this month.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Right. Just this month in Quebec, a runaway train carrying crude oil derailed and exploded, killing 50 people.
Yeah, but that was in Canada.
Yeah. Things don't blow up in the United States.
No, we don't. We're far superior to that.
And the other thing that bothers me is, while you can make an economic and maybe even a patriotic, and I use that term very loosely, argument for in the short term for producing more domestic fossil fuels and thus reducing our reliance on imported fossil fuels, the bottom line is we're still looking towards the combustion of fossil fuels to generate energy, and that is a one-way ticket to some really, really bad stuff. We need to be investing on a massive scale, like a Manhattan Project level scale, an Apollo Project level scale, to get ourselves off of combustion as a source of energy.
Well, so what? You want nuclear power?
No, but it might be preferable to fossil fuel combustion.
Well, I don't think it is, but
don't get me wrong. That's not an endorsement of nuclear power.
Yeah, really. That might be a
least bad option. But I would rather see renewables. I would rather see massive investments in solar farms and in wind farms and in tidal energy and that sort of thing.
But Pacific Electric in California and other companies have been complaining that the creation of energy by wind and solar is hurting their markets. And reducing their income and damaging the economy.
You know, tough.
Oh.
That's capitalism, man. If somebody comes along and out-competes you, then that's the way it goes. You have the right to fail. Right? Remember when all those finance firms crashed the global economy, they failed, right?
Yes.
No, they were bailed out by taxpayers. Oh. That's a bad example. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we want to really focus in on what's happening here. The plan, as it currently stands, is that the Burlington Northern and Santa Fe will be running enormous oil trains. Now, there's coal trains as well, but oil trains to Vancouver, where a huge oil transfer port will be built.
About 40-something acres.
Right. And then that will be put onto big tankers, which will go down the Columbia. Down the Columbia and out into the Pacific and across the globe and then be burned for the production of power.
It'll be shipped to refineries, the crude oil.
Yes.
Well, which eventually will be burned, probably most of it as gasoline.
Yes.
But there's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that comes out of an oil refinery. Fuel's only one of the things.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Nail polish.
This 42-acre terminal was approved last week by the Vancouver Port Authority. It would be operated by a current tenant at the port, Tesoro Corporation, and also a newcomer, Savage Company. And between the two, they would operate this terminal, which would accommodate 360,000 barrels a day.
Wait a minute. 360,000 barrels a day?
360,000 barrels. That's sort of an abstract number. Talk about a barrel of oil. I have no idea, you know, what that looks like.
55 gallons each?
55 gallons. Okay, now I have a better idea of what that looks like. That's a lot of oil. And the most of that oil would be coming all the way from North Dakota.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not just a hazard for this region, but for every place along that
railway. But what
could
go wrong? The Burlington Northern assures us that they've checked their track and they've modernized their track.
I mentioned that earlier this month an oil train exploded in Canada, killing almost 50 people.
But that was
people.
In Canada.
All right. I feel like we're going in circles. So here's what we want to talk about today. Specifically, we want to talk about the prospect of oil trains making their way through our region. To ports along the Columbia. And we also want to talk about the larger question of what do we do to wean ourselves from combustion as a source of energy.
Well, and I want to add this. Engineer Steve gave me a note here saying that Arizona wants to prevent rooftop solar devices, solar panels, because they'll produce excess power, which will harm the grid.
Harm the grid.
Well, the profit, the profit from the grid.
Right, because the grid was built to carry profit all around to various people's houses.
Yeah, it moves profit from here to there.
From here to there. Right. Well, then it just moved electrons, right? So if you can produce clean electrons from the sun, doesn't that make sense?
No, it doesn't, because you've got to make money or it doesn't work.
If these companies are worried about free electrons from the sun impacting their profit, why don't they build solar plants and sell it to people?
Well, that's because it would take a more investment than they want to make.
Well, my heart bleeds.
Yeah.
That's the free market.
But you
compete or die.
There's no free market.
Well, in this case,
there's monopoly capital.
In this case, there really ought to be. If a cleaner, more efficient alternative comes along and your old dinosaur of a model can't compete, well, that's too damn bad.
But I like dinosaurs.
Well, they're all dead.
Dead.
Yeah.
We're burning the dinosaurs.
Says engineer Steve.
All right. And in the larger, I want us to focus in on the plan for this oil terminal at Vancouver. But before we do, I do want to mention the obvious, the XL pipeline, which Obama's backing away from, I got to say, sort of, I think.
Well, if he's backing away from pipelines in favor of oil trains, I don't know that that's necessarily progress.
Well, I don't know that it's progress, but it's interesting. There's that. There's the fact of the leveling of mountains throughout the country. There's the obvious facts of what fracking does to the environment. All of this points to what you said earlier, that is that we need to look at the more rational approach of utilizing the power of the sun to produce energy in our world. And that's being blocked, in essence, by the existing old dinosaurs of monopoly capital.
Indeed. And there's some interesting stuff happening sort of on the margins here, too. For example, there's an ethanol plant in Klatskanai that was built with considerable public investment. It was supposed to be a wonderful, great new green facility that would store this natural plant-derived source of fuel, ethanol.
Right.
It's now being used to store crude oil.
Ah.
So.
Ah,
so.
He said with knowledge. Ah.
Why don't we take some phone calls?
Yeah, let's take some phone calls.
Who's
now
next?
Remember, folks. Let's focus
Good
in
morning.
On the plan to move crude oil up the or down the Columbia to Vancouver and then to ship it overseas. Theodore, you're on the air.
Hey, just to quote one of my favorite movies, The Big Lebowski, this is nothing but nothing about oil. I mean, obviously, that's the conversation. A great movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But, guys, they are going to offshore this stuff to Asia and South America, and even there's a prohibition against exporting crude, except out of Alaska, and that's why they've got these they're building some of the largest refineries on the Gulf Coast in Louisiana. They can handle 1 million barrels a day of crude and turn it into distillates, and then you've got Motiva, which is going to be the largest refinery complex in the world. And so what they're going to do is they're going to run it through an expanded Panama Canal and run it down the coast of Brazil, and they're going to offshore the profits. None of it's going to come back, and all we're going to be left with is the pollution and high oil and fuel prices. And it's a con job. This is we have turned into a basic banana republic in which guys with lawyers and armies come in, they loot the country, and take the profits to Luxembourg or wherever they're going to, Hong Kong, Singapore, et cetera, et cetera.
Ain't global capitalism grand?
Well, this is not capitalism. This is crony capitalism. And when you're not in a marketplace, you know, comparing your crappy tomatoes to maybe some small farmer's really nice tomatoes, and what you do is you block that guy from marketing his stuff so you can market the garbage, then we don't have capitalism.
You're right. That's not exactly a free market, is it?
No, these are oligarchies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I want to thank you for the call. And you know, we're probably going to get a lot of agreement on this issue, but there may be some people out there who are going to disagree with us, and we really welcome your calls. 231-8187. Here's a point that engineer Steve makes. Look, the sun is the source of all of our energy. I mean, that's a fact. And
for the most part, yeah.
What do you mean the most part? No, we can't.
I could quibble, but go on.
You could quibble?
Broadly true, yes.
All right. And the coal, the gas, all the oil, all that stuff are the product of the evolutionary process of the development of the planet. And these are the waste products of previous forests and dinosaurs.
Mostly plants. Yeah.
And then essentially, there's no reason on Earth why we can't make the process more rational by utilizing the power of the sun, which produces the wind and produces the solar energy.
In reality, the burning of fossil fuels is energy derived from ancient sunlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a mystical thing. It's not a magical thing. It's not pie in the sky. The technologies are here now. The problem, I think, is that the people who own all of the energy resources in the country are not interested in the kind of investment that would be necessary. At the same time that that's going on, the salvation, allegedly, through nuclear power has proven itself to be absolutely a chimera. And in fact, the whole nuclear industry is underinsured and any nuclear plant has a, at best, 40-year lifespan. And then all the poisons that are produced by that have to be dealt with. And we still haven't found a site to put all that nuclear waste.
France derives a pretty large majority of its electricity from nuclear power and has never had an accident.
Well, that's true. It has never had an accident, but does have a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of nuclear waste that has become an issue.
Agreed. Again, I'm not endorsing nuclear power. I'm just saying.
You're just saying.
There appears to be better ways to do it than we do it here.
Well, there are more recent technologies that make nuclear power somewhat more safe. But look at what happened in Japan.
Japan, of course.
The fact of the matter, look what happened to Three Mile Island. Look what happened at Chernobyl. The fact of the matter is that nuclear itself is an incredibly dangerous thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, France hasn't had an accident until they have one. So.
Yeah, that's right.
What really frustrates me when you step back and you look at this from a big picture perspective is I see this as all of a piece. We talked about the declining lot of the middle class, the diminishing purchasing power of the average American worker, the diminishing wages of the average American worker. All of this is of a piece. We could reverse this entire trend with the right sorts of investments in the right areas that would simultaneously wean us from fossil fuels and put Americans to work building sustainable, useful infrastructure of all kinds.
But that seems to be politically impossible.
It apparently is politically impossible. Now, I think it's safe to say that both you and I have given up whatever hope we had in President Obama, or most of it.
Well, right.
Yeah, I'm not on board anymore.
It's possible
I'm not,
that he can be, you know.
I'm not on the riding the Obama oil train anymore. No, I'm not. But I must say this for the guy. On numerous occasions, he has put forward very progressive jobs legislation before Congress, only to have it kicked in the teeth by the Republican House majority.
Well,
so it's not as if he hasn't attempted to begin to do the right thing.
I think he is. I don't want to spend time with a conversation on the air about Obama.
I don't either.
But I think that one of the things that makes him a compromiser, and we've all talked about this, is that he always punts on the first down. You know.
Yes. Yes.
And he's dealing with a Congress that is, as far as I can tell, more interested in having an economic depression before his term is over than anything else, so that the Republicans can assume power. I mean, I think that's the big strategy, the grand strategy of the right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very unfortunate situation. It's very unpatriotic. In fact, I'd call it treason.
Indeed. It's very unfortunate that at this point in history, the Republican majority in the House is among the stupidest people in the nation.
I don't know about that's stupid. Very, I think
I'm going to come
short-sighted.
Out.
Short-sighted.
I'm going to come out in favor of stupid.
You want to vote for stupid?
Stupid.
Okay, let's go
okay,
with stupid.
Okay, I'll also throw in ignorant. I'll see you're stupid and raise you an ignorant.
I'll give you an ignorant and raise you strategy.
I'll give you strategy and toss in mean-spirited.
I give you mean-spirited and add foolish.
I'll see you're foolish and raise you a bigoted.
Enough.
All right.
Let's talk about what's planned for Vancouver.
Who's on the phone? BT, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you know, I often hear these little kids say something like, Well, we'll get solar power when the big corporations can put a meter on the sun. So I'll add that to what you were saying a few minutes ago about the big corporations stopping us. I say, go around them. Why do you need them? Why wait for them? If you think it's easy,
well,
where's everyone else that might do it?
There's so many problems with using sun energy, not because there has to be problems, but because of exploitation and foolishness. The Chinese, and this is a problem that China faces on a huge scale in all of its industry, seem to be unable to run a straight-out, legitimate economy. There's so much bribe, there's so much payback and sleazy stuff going on that even the solar panels that are being shipped turn out to be faulty.
Yeah, well, unlike us, the Chinese started out with the corruption already built in, whereas here we just slowly voted for without realizing we were voting for.
Well, I don't know about that.
Interventionists.
You know, the history of the railroads in this country, which were, by the way, not monopoly capital alone, but rather supported by the government, involved land deals that were horrendous.
Yeah.
And the railroads, even after Westinghouse invented the air brake for trains, the railroads didn't want to adopt it because it would cost money.
Parts of the beginning of what I was saying. It's this intervention. The government was just interested in making sure that we can get people to the West Coast so that when we're involved with the Civil War, the Russians or somebody wouldn't attack us there and take over the West Coast. We were busy. But I was against that anyway. Because I wasn't around then, but
you weren't?
The railroad should have been allowed to slowly build using their own money, like James Hill did up in the northern border. But there were problems with that. I mean, those railroads were really very poorly made because they were getting money for each mile they put down. So government money being thrown at something that doesn't really equal efficiency.
The investment company, Credit Mobilier, which sold bonds to Europe and so on, was an incredible scam.
These people were making money building the railroad rather than in actually charging customers once it was built, and that was true with a lot of small lines all over the eastern states. They'd make just like I hate to poke this one at you, but light rail. It's all about making money building it. They don't really care if nobody's on.
No, I think that's a good criticism. I also want to point out that the rail system in the United States, with government support and local state support, was a major enterprise that in the 1950s was sort of abandoned except for freight in favor of highways. And we had the National Defense Highway Act under Eisenhower, which essentially persuaded Congress that we needed a rapid high-speed highway system in case the Russians came. And that with that rationalization, we built the interstate freeway system, which then turned toward trucking.
We still have lots of freight on railroads because that's very efficient. But I'll end my call by saying that we do have a lot of dumb people in Congress, including one person who thinks that the island of Guam floats and will tip over if there's too many people on it. And he's in the Democratic Party, by the way.
Oh, okay. So, it's good to know stupid doesn't have a party.
See you guys later.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, I'm all excited about putting a meter on the sun. Here's the plan, right?
Okay.
We are going to send some ships out into space.
Ships.
And we're going to construct a huge orbital lens above the United States. And then we're going to charge people for every photon that passes through that lens and then lands in the United States.
Wow.
It's genius, don't you think?
No.
Okay.
I think that's a silly scheme.
503-231-8187.
But let's focus in. Let's focus in on what's planned for Vancouver, because the Vancouver City Council just rolled over for the railroads and for the petroleum industry to allow rail cars loaded with crude oil from the Rocky Mountain region and elsewhere to come up the Columbia and to stop in Vancouver, where it'll be offloaded onto ships that will take it to Asia. And the industry, the oil industry, and the railroad say, hey, the railroad track is in great shape. We're going to have mostly uncleared numbers, but mostly new cars to carry the oil. It's all going to be cool. What could go wrong? Here's my rule. Whenever anyone says, what could possibly go wrong, the answer is, probably a lot. Let's hear from you, 231-8187.
Art, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hi.
I want to say something that's a little bit counterintuitive. So I'd appreciate it if you didn't automatically think it's ridiculous.
No, nothing is ridiculous in this world.
The oil from North Dakota will be principally a vehicle fuel, I think.
What kind of fuel?
Vehicle.
Oh, vehicle fuel. Vehicles, okay.
Cars, trucks, gotcha. Planes. And the new technologies in vehicles, we really should be going to electric drive.
Yes.
There's three ways to go. There's the all-battery electric. There's the plug-in hybrid electric, which has a smaller battery pack. You can do 3, 4 even hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and as opposed to one all-electric battery car. And then there's the hydrogen fuel, which is kind of ridiculous. It's just way too complicated. But
hydrogen go boom.
It's not that it's dangerous to handle. It's inefficient to produce and distribute.
Right.
It's way too complicated. And you can do the same thing with battery, and you can do more, I say, with a plug-in hybrid that burns any kind of fuel. So the plug-in hybrid has the potential to reduce energy consumption and fuel use more than the all-battery electric. That's counterintuitive, but I believe it's true.
Okay, so, and?
Well, the automobile industry is all favoring all-battery electrics now, as if they appealing to the good progressives' idea of what we should be doing, but they know better. They know that the plug-in hybrid is a better match with your solar rooftop that's just on your roof.
Right.
And they know that if you've got a car that will only get you 10 or 20 miles on that smaller battery pack, it means that people are going to tend to drive less. And more people will tend to drive less because there's an economic incentive to use the cheaper electricity.
Well, that's true. That's true. And then there's another element, which is we still have not got, and TriMet has been very disappointing in this respect, a good, decent mass transit system for local use, for regional use. And then beyond that, we still don't have what Europe has and what much of Latin America is starting to get and we're seeing in Asia, which is high-speed trains.
Into the question, I'd say the MAX and the streetcar systems are one of the finest in the country. They are comparatively. And what I say we need is better buses. I say, you know the paratransit buses that you see out there, and they're used mostly for seniors and people with disability?
Sure.
Well, General Motors and Ford produce those, and they've been obsolete for decades, but we pay for them. And I say, well, obviously they should be low-floor models.
Uh-huh.
They should be running on hybrid engines. So that's a direction that TriMet could be going if they, had some balls. And as far as the other buses, the new buses that we got out, they're not new. They're the same old buses that have been around since the mid-90s. The low-floor buses, they're about the same. And it looks like the hybridization is not going to be working out for that size of bus. So I'm emphasizing that TriMet should be investing in shorter buses where hybrids would be more effective. So, but the main thing, and is that plug-in hybrids are more effective than all battery electrics. That way, we can match our solar panels to the batteries in our garages and parking garages, and end up driving less and using transit more.
No, I think you're right, and I appreciate the call, and I want to hear from some other people. But thank you very much.
And another thing.
Yeah, quick.
A couple weeks, 3 weeks ago, you said the question about the streetcar. Isn't proven yet. Its effectiveness isn't proven yet. I think it's pretty much proven in Portland's case that it is a good investment. I hope we continue to.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks for the call. You know, I really want us to zero in on this port plan for Vancouver, this oil port.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I think we're already too scattered.
Oh, you mean on the show?
Yeah.
You don't mean mean the port isn't going to happen.
Yeah, the port's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. let's hear some news.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio author and activist Sandra Steingraber speaks on fracking and public health. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. Flashpoints features audio excerpts from the documentary film Project Censored, the movie. At 11, Stage and Studio presents a documentary special on Portland urban naturalist Mike Hauk. At 11:30, an Art Focus host Joseph Galvan interviews photographer Holly Andres about her show The Homecoming and about shooting the Sasquatch Festival for Teen Vogue. And
What? Wait a minute.
Shooting the Sasquatch Festival
for Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue. And her love of
what about
Instagram.
The Abominable Snowman?
Now, you know what the Sasquatch Festival is, right?
No. Oh.
It's a music and art thing.
Oh, yeah, oh, okay. art, music, yeah. Music. Yes, of course. I knew that.
That's now featured in Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue.
All this and more.
I didn't even know there was a Teen Vogue.
Coming up today on your listener-supported radio station. Look for our ad in Teen
so
Vogue.
So what is it, like Anorexics United thing?
Oh, I don't know.
All right. 231-8187. Please, let's see if we can focus in on the plans for Vancouver. And George, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe and Abe. I just wanted to add a note. A few minutes ago, one of you, or maybe both of you, said there's never been a nuclear accident in France in the nuclear power industry.
I said that. Was I incorrect?
There's a book called In Mortal Hands by Stephanie Cook, which I heard about listening to a KBOO program all day on nuclear power.
Uh-huh.
And on pages 138 following, there is a discussion of a very large plant at Marcoul, France, in near Avignon. And I'm looking at the date here, trying to find the date when this happened, but on pages 139 to 40, on page 140, it says here, the plant caught fire, and the manager, Pierre Zaleski, quickly drove the 30 miles to Marcoul and discovered the source of the fire by peering down a fuel channel, and he was very concerned. He said he admitted later that a lot of radioactivity got into the air.
Oh, really?
But the extent of the contamination, she says, was never revealed. Other high-level officials, including a man named Perrin, were dispatched to investigate the reports. Their reports were buried. And then I'd just like to put in a plug. You're doing a terrific job with the local issues here of the coal trains and the oil trains. This is very important. I would like to also say, though, capital seems to put us time again, whether we're in this country or in Asia or Europe or Africa, into horrible positions. And there's an economist named Richard Wolff who keeps suggesting that perhaps Marx had a major point here. If we leave ourselves in thrall or in subjection to capital locally and globally, we're going to be seeing similar dilemmas, and we'll fight courageously to stop various things to get reforms, and we're going to find ourselves time and again, I think, watching capital abandon us when it can't get exactly what it wants, perhaps. And when it can, it'll destroy as much of Mother Earth's environment as it finds profitable to do. So I think Richard Wolff should be admitted maybe subliminally into this for the moment. Please continue with your interesting discussion.
Well, thank you very much for the call. And I'm glad to, I'm not happy to learn, but I'm glad that somebody has paid attention to what happened in France, because the official line on France is it's never had a nuclear accident.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Well, ain't so, apparently.
Right.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
You bet.
And Richard Wolff is a very good source, a very reliable source.
Yeah, yes.
So let us pay attention to these things.
Meanwhile, as reliable as the official French accounts of nuclear safety.
I actually would like somebody to talk about the 350 event that took place on Saturday, where a whole bunch of people went into the water of the Columbia. Mm-hmm. On the water of the Columbia, hopefully not in it. It's a little cold this time of year. And I didn't see anything in the news, but maybe that's my fault. So
yeah,
somebody who knows something about that could call in and tell us. That
sure.
would be good.
I thought you wanted to focus in on the Vancouver.
Well, World. I know. But, you know, the thing is that this thing in Vancouver is probably going to happen. And the Burlington Northern Santa Fe says that it's examined its tracks. It's put in many miles of new track along the northern side of the Columbia River. And that it's going to have a whole bunch of new, it doesn't specify, a whole bunch of new oil-carrying rail cars. And it's all cool. And the new plant is going to be state-of-the-art, or, you know, state-of-the-art in Vancouver. And it's what's really weird is it's going to be right next to this new plan for housing and a kind of a shopping center and a place to visit the Columbia and actually swim in the Columbia. It's also planned only a few yards away from that oil facility.
Oh man,
I don't see how the pencils out.
Yeah, it is pretty hard to see. This seems like a very short-sighted solution here.
Well, here's the thing that I think is very important to understand, and I guess most of our audience probably does, but I want to say this, make it explicit. When you have an economic depression, let's not kid around, this is an economic depression, and the Congress is paralyzed or deliberately paralyzing things, it's very easy to turn to any quick way of getting jobs and of producing capital. This is an opportunity that cannot be missed by the opportunists of capitalism.
Yeah, understood. That opportunity is there for wealth to be created. The question is, where does that wealth ultimately reside? It's not going to be in the hands of workers. It's going to be in the hands of the investor class. And as a caller pointed out earlier, more and more in this era of global capitalism, that ownership class isn't even here in the United States. It's elsewhere. I mean, the fingers of these multinational oil corporations reach all over the globe. And it's, I would put money on the fact that in this massive network of North American pipelines and now rail-bound petroleum transport is investment capital from companies headquartered in Europe and companies headquartered in Asia and all over the place. So we're really not even talking about a question of creating American wealth for Americans. This is about creating more wealth for the emerging transnational investment class that is quickly becoming the true rulers of the planet.
I think you're right, but I also think that if you're a person trying to make the nut, you have a family, you have responsibility, you're looking for a job, it's pretty hard to say that the abstraction that you're talking about, the nature of capitalism.
I don't know that it's an abstraction.
Well,
and this is real money.
All right, but the fact of the matter is that if you're looking for a job, and here's a job that's relatively well-paying, working at this port, it's pretty hard for you to oppose it. And that's the strategy. That's part of the strategy of all of this.
It is part of the strategy of all of this. To impoverish and beat down the working class so that they will grasp at whatever straws are dangled before them, that's most definitely part of the strategy.
Do you think it's a conspiracy?
I don't like that word so much because it gets bandied about so much. But if you're talking about, is this a deliberate outcome that has resulted from a series of deliberate decisions over the years? Yes, I do think that it's a conspiracy.
Well, I think that it's an inevitability. The problems of capitalism include the kinds of issues that we're talking about. We are in the end stage of capitalism in this country.
Oh, no. Oh, we are so not.
We're not.
Oh, no.
What are we?
Oh, we're seeing the global capitalist system become established and deeply rooted. What we're seeing, perhaps, is the end of American capitalism as a source of wealth and benefit for American workers. Capitalism itself has never been more robust. It has never had a larger reach, and capital has never been able to move as easily around the globe as it can now.
That's true. That's true. I will withdraw my prediction of the end of capitalism in our time.
Maybe the end of capitalism as we understood it growing up.
I think that's true. And I think that it's that one of the things that makes all of this very interesting is that the average person, in his or her effort to survive, to meet the nut, is really reduced. I like John Lennon on this subject. We're all effing peasants as far as a wealthy person can see.
Yeah, I think.
I think that's a tragic situation that most of us are in.
Really, I see it, this rise of the global capitalist system as sort of a return to feudalism, in which corporations, corporate boards have replaced kings and capital has replaced lands. Essentially, working people are more and more filling the role that serfs used to fill.
Ooh, you talking bad talk, dude.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear from some people. 231-8187.
Who's next, Steve? Bonnie, good morning.
You wanted a report back from summer heat, Columbia River Climate Action from last Saturday.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it was organized by Rising Tide, Rising Tide Portland, which is an international climate justice all-volunteer organization, and we have a chapter in Portland, hardworking folks, and we had support from National350.org. The morning began with workshops on a number of issues, the export issues that are going on, all the export threats that are going through the Pacific Northwest, and on other issues that relate. And then there were speakers. And then at 1:30, a lot more people showed up, and there were kayaks in the river, many, many kayaks, a beautiful, colorful sight. And above, on the bridge, hundreds and hundreds of people carrying signs and banners, big scarves that said, draw the line, drawing the line here. We will not let our wonderful Columbia River become a carbon corridor. And giant letters that said, no carbon exports and save our climate future. And it was thrilling. There were people from as far away as Lake County and Bellingham, Washington. Lake County, Southern Oregon.
Yes.
Bellingham, Washington. It was a thrilling day. It was a great way to meet folks and to share our determination. It's a little discouraging when I hear you guys say it will go through. It won't go through if we stand together and fight it.
Well, you're right. You're right. And I'm really glad you're making that point. This is something that is defeatable, but it will take massive movement to defeat it.
The mass is growing. Tell everyone you know. Share the news.
And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Do you have any idea how many people participated on Saturday?
Well, it depends on what you've read. I've read thousands. I've read hundreds.
Ah.
It looked like over 2,000 to me, and I'm no judge of it. I think it depends on when the reporters showed up. As I say, a lot, you know, the event began at 10 a.m., but a lot of people showed up at 1:30 for the actions, the river action. There was a giant banner that was dropped that said, "None oil, coal, gas, none shall pass." Indication. So it was
the gas shall
it's
not
a
pass.
Warning that we will stand together. We don't want our area changed. We don't want the added carbon that this will bring. We want to stop oil, coal, gas at the extraction level. It's absurd. We have alternatives. It's a lie. We have to stop this.
I really am glad you called. I wanted to ask you another question. Maybe you do or don't know the answer to this, but how did the media, was there much coverage on the regular conventional media?
Well, I don't watch much conventional media. I tried. There was a 42-second clip on KGW. There was an AP report. OPB has had a number of reports. You can go to the Rising Tide website for photos. There's been a lot of photos, and I think there'll be a lot more out. So,
well,
it's a media thing. It's got, you know, all that was in place to get the message across.
Right, and I want to be clear that I think it was a wonderful action, and I think it's very important that things like that happen more and more and more.
Exactly.
And I think it can be a family fun event.
Right.
Yeah, right. I'm really glad you reminded us that these sorts of things can be resisted and even stopped, because I find myself more and more, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, slipping into a very cynical place.
Give it up.
You're right. Yes.
It's growing. Institutionalized slavery ended, and we didn't have the communication tools that we have now. It can be over. You know, there was a heavy-duty whaling industry that stopped under its own weight.
You're right.
But there are social movements that have done incredible things. I don't know too many people in this country that work every day of the week, 12 hours a day. And
that
happened because of these kind of events, nonviolent, peaceful actions, and occasionally civil disobedience, because it's called for at times.
I'm really glad you called, and I'm really glad you're giving us this report. And I think both Abe and I are sometimes guilty of what the Catholics call the sin of despair. And I think it's really important that we understand that there's potential for resistance and effective ways to change things up. And I think that one of the things that we're trying to do is to emphasize those, and you're making that possible. Thank you very much for that.
Absolutely.
Call.
Thank you.
Well
Bye-bye.
Done. Yeah. I needed to hear that.
Yeah, it was just the right moment.
It was.
Yeah.
All right, 503-231-8187. Anita, good morning.
Good morning. I was also at the event. I believe your previous caller covered it very nicely. I am from Vancouver, and the Vancouver Sierra Club was also involved. Columbia River Keepers also was involved in this. There were several people there. And I would also like to correct one little detail. It was not the Vancouver City Council. It was the Vancouver Port Authority.
Ah, thank you.
We managed to mobilize fairly quickly once we realized that talks had begun in April and they intended to be done by July to have this through with as little public input as possible, but at least we did get some. Raised a few points at that hearing, both the Monday night a week ago and Tuesday morning a week ago today when they voted on it. So, for instance, one of the points that was raised is the flashpoint of this oil is lower than that of gasoline.
You mean that the temperature at which it ignites?
That's what I understand.
Okay.
That's the Bakken oil shale, which is exceedingly dangerous stuff that they plan to ship through. But among other things, and they are not prepared for, I'm interested in seeing how they would earthquake-proof the area for those storage terminals. The following morning, a gentleman who is a geologist testified first, saying, you know, in case of the big one, and we've got a 37% chance of that in the next 50 years, the ground under those things, the storage tanks, would be liquefied. This is not good. This is ever so not a done deal. This was round one. We landed a couple of blows, but they did knock us out in the first round, but we're not out of it yet. So we do need, at least on the Washington side, to be contacting Governor Inslee, who definitely could stop this. So, and that's not the only thing. There are other steps in the permitting process. So the main thing is get informed. But when Bill McKibben was here earlier in the month, he mentioned his theory is that this is the last gasp of the fossil fuel industry because I think they finally get it, that enough awareness about global warming is starting to happen that people eventually will no longer be able to snow people like they have, and so they're doing their level best to get everything out as fast as possible.
Well, I agree that they're doing their level best to get everything out as quickly as possible, but I think we're far from the last gasp of the petroleum industry.
Well, I hope to heaven that we can make it the last gasp, because up to us.
It really is, and I'm glad you emphasized that. I think that people should be actively involved in this. Anyone who looks to the future, anybody with children or grandchildren, anybody who wants to have children, anybody who wants to have a future for humankind needs to be involved in this process, because we now have the evidence, clearly, that the fossil fuel approach is a dead end.
And we can do better.
We can do better. And I'm really glad you made your call. I really appreciate the information, and I really hope it inspires a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, and thank you for taking part in that event.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I just plan to be active on everything that I can to stop this if I can, and every other fossil fuel thing through this area, or this beautiful tourist area will not be a beautiful
tourist area. You go, lady.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much for having this program. Oh, by the way,
yes.
One of the workshops was on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is known as NAFTA on steroids, and it's sort of like this oil terminal, which the powers that be are trying to sneak in under the radar. This thing is a disaster, and I suggest that you look into it. because I think it would be really worth your while to investigate that and maybe inform the rest of us as fully as possible on what...
I'm really glad you brought that up. I think we should do a show on it in the near future. I don't know if we'll get to it this summer because summer being summer, but we will do something about it and we will make clear exactly... I think your description, NAFTA on steroids, is exactly right. And I think it's being done without...
I prefer to call that thing TPP. I like toilet paper packed.
Listen, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
And you keep on.
Oh, you too.
Absolutely.
All right. 231-8187.
These last two callers have just saved the day.
Well, I think so. And I think that the focus really needs to be on what we can do to stop this silliness. And I think it is stoppable. I think, again, when we go, what are we going to do? We sort of... missing the point, which is there's a lot we can do.
There is a lot we can do.
All right, 231-8187. Who do we got?
Rex. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
Great show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add, just to clarify objectively, I did a count. I was at the Saturday event in Columbia, at the rally in Vancouver first, prior to occupation of the pedestrian. And I've done counts before for various entities, and I counted at the rally itself earlier about 700 people roughly at the rally, the speaking engagements, and mm-hmm. then at on top of the bridge. And in the process, I noticed a lot of people showing up. So I estimated probably close to 1,000 people altogether. I think that would be a firm number, and there are 100 plus kayakers. I counted around 108, and I figured, well, maybe, you know, plus or minus, and there are also some larger vessels that were there. So it was pretty impressive, and there was media coverage. I was there with my spouse and our nephew, who is going to be a freshman at Oregon State in science honors, and he has really gotten into this and is going to be very active down in Corvallis on this 350.org.
Uh-huh.
And he looked around after the event, and I'm going to quote him. I looked around for different articles on the protests and how easy they were to find. KATU was a headline and a good article. KGW is a good article and relatively easy to find. Oregon Live was a little hard to find, but a very good article. Portland Tribune's article could only be found through a Google search, but it was good. Now, here's an important point that he notices. And KOIN's article was posted a whole day late, and I'm not going to express it, but he less than positive, and it focused on the illegal action of rappelling of the bridge and doesn't really capture what the protest was about. And then
that's fairly typical.
Checked the Portland Tribune's article, and it was changed to be based on the KOIN article.
Well, that's interesting. Interesting.
I wanted to bring that up, and this is a...
Well, that's monkey see, monkey do.
yeah, it's kind of like stand your ground. But one of the things, in addition to the media, I think that my last point that I'd like to mention is that I believe this is really a civil rights aspect that we're facing right now.
How so?
And you know what, one thing that we can capture from this, like from Representative 14 term representative from Georgia, John Lewis, who is probably the only speaker still remaining that was there at the I Have a Dream speech at the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah.
And he said this is a struggle that goes on forever. And it's a struggle that we have to, you know, probably overcome only by love and by, you know, resistance that captures the masses' hearts. And that's what we have to really go for. And I think the facts that are out there and the potential for this is very, very harmful long term, even for the investment class. We talk about all these, you know, the capitalism, but we're all investors in capitalism, some sort, and my contention is that this has to be reeled in, and it's a part of the civil rights struggle, really.
And that's an interesting way of looking at it, and I really appreciate your call, and I really appreciate the information you gave us. I thank you very much.
And thank you.
All right, do we have time for another caller? Dave, go for it.
Got to make it fast.
Okay, I'm interested. I live in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
I believe there may be a wealthy NIMBY obstacle to either coal or oil trains, or maybe both, certainly to coal trains.
Uh-huh.
There is, do either of you know the geography of Vancouver much?
No.
Do you know where Highway 14 is?
It's
the road closest to the Columbia River.
Yeah.
There is a pretty wealthy string of developments between Highway 14 and the river, which means they're also between railroad tracks and the Columbia River.
Oh, the irony. The irony.
Yeah.
I love it.
Neighborhoods are Fat Cat Central.
We're going to have to leave it there.
People are going to be quiet if they suddenly find their landscaping has coal dust in it.
All right, we're going to have to let you go. I'm sorry, we're out
really?
Of time. Listen, thanks everybody, and most of all for lifting our spirits.
Yes, thank you very much, and giving us hope. And stay tuned to KBOO, best in programming of any kind, anywhere in the world.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, an institution dedicated to serving adult students by bringing a progressive perspective to educating the whole person. Listeners can learn about 23 bachelor's degree programs in the arts, business, and helping professions at the information session on Saturday, August 24th at 9 a.m., details at merrillhurst.edu. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:01. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, author and activist Sandra Steingraber speaks on fracking and public health. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. Flashpoints features audio excerpts from the documentary film Project Censored, the movie. At 11, Stage and Studio presents a documentary special on Portland urban naturalist Mike Hauk. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews photographer Holly Andrus about her show, The Homecoming, and about shooting the Sasquatch